All right, so who is to blame for the rise in crime? I think that's what everybody's really talking about recently, is you've got a bunch of shootings happen, a bunch of robberies happening, a guy tries to rape a lady in a courthouse. Who do you blame? Everybody likes to point blame at somebody. I think I know who we should blame, but before we get to that, just a reminder, at 7:45 tonight in the Good News segment, I'm going to announce this show's code word for your chance to win four tickets to the first ever Seahawks training camp practice at Lumen Field on Sunday, August 8th, featuring live entertainment, food trucks, and more. You can get tickets at Seahawks.com/training camp. Again, you'd enter the code word, which I'm going to give away at 7:45, and you will be registered to win that at mynorthwest.com/win. Okay, so who do we blame? Who do we blame for all of this stuff that's going on? Because it's a really clear answer, right? Let's just start off with the answer. It's bad policy. You know, you could point the finger, truthfully, you could point the finger at like Sawant or Durkin or Diaz or Best or really anybody that you want to, Gonzalez. You could really point your finger at those individuals. But it is bad policy that compounds over time, that leads to the degradation of a city, that leads to the erosion of a culture. And that is why you see an uptick in crime and an uptick in violence and an uptick of all these incidences, particularly in a city that was once very safe, right? If we look at the metrics of Seattle, you look at King County, pretty much the same as the rest of the state. And then over about the last 10 years, you see this slow uptick. And then over the last 4 years, you see this dramatic spike in all of this kind of behavior, particularly in the last 18 months. It's bad policy. And that policy comes from a philosophy that I am very familiar with. I interacted a lot with it in college from people who are, you know, they're kind of self-avowed leftists. And they go around and they say that the system of government that we currently have is failing a particular group of society, specifically BIPOC people, people of color. And then they also say that it is failing poor people. But it comes even from before that, right? So how do all these young people at college get these ideas? You know, take someone who's like a staunch socialist like Sawant. Sawant doesn't start out as a socialist in the same way that I didn't start out as a filthy capitalist. You have to learn your way into that kind of thinking. You have to be almost programmed into that kind of thinking. And so it comes from, again, our education, lower education and then higher education, which, again, is a policy. All of this has to do with policy, 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 which is why, you know, it would be so easy for me to take a clip of, Gonzalez or Sawant or any of these people, Durkin, any of these people, and say, this is the reason why we are having so many issues in the county of or in the state or, you know, whatever it is. It'd be so easy for me to do that. What's harder is to actually pinpoint the policy, right? And to actually talk about policy. And most people don't want to talk policy. Most people don't actually want to talk on the ground nitty gritty policy. But when you have a policy, let us just say, that allows someone to drive the wrong way on I-5 and the sheriff's department has to disengage because of the new legislation around when you can and can't engage criminals, that is an issue, right? And then you start to see where the rubber meets the road. No pun intended, you actually start to see how this failure begins to unfold. You know, a bit of a segue. I was a Boy Scout. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I was a Boy Scout. I was an Eagle Scout, as a matter of fact. And when I was in Boy Scouts, it was kind of I got into Boy Scouts probably right at the tail end of the 90s. And in our fun little Boy Scout troop, there was kids that were 11, 12, 13 years old. And then the guys that ran the actual Boy Scout troop were like 16, 17 years old. So in my little 11-year-old brain, these guys were basically adults, right? I still remember their names. And they were the older guys, right? So they're like the cool guys and they have girlfriends and they have cars and they're talking about being in high school. And us younger guys really looked up to these guys. Now, they had a kind of an order to things in Boy Scouts, right? There's this kind of fascist hierarchy that they have where you're like a regular scout, and then you're a star scout and a life scout and then an Eagle Scout. Second class, first class, all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I noticed moving through that system was that when I got to the system, there was, again, this kind of fascist hierarchy where we all had to stand in straight lines and we had to salute each other and we had to acknowledge the hierarchy that was around us. And in a weird way, because there was that order, because there was that structure, we all had a lot of fun. We all were able to have a really good time, even though it was kind of fascist, right? We were still, we would go on these camping trips. I was in a big Boy Scout troop, by the way. It's probably about 50 kids. And these older guys, despite the fact that they were 4 or 5 years older than us, they still instilled in us this sense of community and camaraderie. But that order was still there. The rules were still kind of there. So, you know, the younger kids camp over here, older guys camp over here, older guys are the troop leaders and they have troop meetings and then they tell us all what we're going to do. And when we would go camping, they would help us pack our bags and stuff like that. There was a system in place that we respected. There was a system in place that we appreciated. Now, later, as I got older and all those other guys aged out of the system, all of a sudden, me and my group of friends was that we were the leaders, right? And we were supposed to be the older guys now. But it didn't work out the same way because the parents of these younger kids came in and they told us, we don't want that same system for our kids. We don't want to do this whole, like, you know, we don't really want them to, like, salute you guys because that's, like, the military. And that's, you know, Boy Scouts isn't the military. And we don't really feel like it's fair that the older guys get to camp over here and the younger guys have to camp over here. So we actually want, you know, we want everybody to be mixed together. And then on top of that, when we have our little troops, we have our little organizations, we don't actually want the older guys leading the troops. We want these younger guys to be able to get that experience as well. So we're going to do that system as well. So what we had previously had of this loose sense of order and this loose sense of structure became basically nothing. And I remember we tried to do a flag ceremony. And Boy Scouts, this is a really big deal. You know, you get two lines of Boy Scouts and they walk down the aisle and they have the flag folded and everyone is saluting and we string it up on the pole and everyone is celebrating America and everything that's great about America. And I remember trying to rehearse this with the younger guys, trying to get them to do it right, try to get them to do it correctly and have some reverence for the flag. And they were goofing off and they're giggling and they're shoving each other and they're pinching each other. And one of the things that had been shown to me was when you wanted to get everybody's attention, you would clap your hands and you say, hey, guys, listen up, pay attention. One of the moms came over to me after I tried to get these kids' attention. Keep in mind, I'm like 16 years old, about, you know, 16, 17 years old. I'm trying to get these young 11, 12 year old kids' attention. So I do the clap thing that had been taught to me by the people who were had taught me how to be a leader. So mom comes over, she pulls me aside, physically grabs my shoulder, pulls me aside, and she says, you don't talk to my kids that way. Got right in my face. And I remember going to my grandfather and I said, you know, I don't really want to do this anymore. I don't really want to do this anymore. So what ended up happening, as I finished all my merit badge stuff, and I didn't even go to my Eagle Scout ceremony. For me, it was just like a point to get on my road to college. I didn't even do, you know, I didn't even really finish it. I didn't really age out like how the generation came before me. I just stopped going because it wasn't worth my time anymore. I tell you that story to say this. That's basically what's going on right now in King County, where you have this idea of kind of overarching, we have to be very delicate and very sensitive to all these different groups of people, but we will not have any sense of order. You see it with all of these kinds of policies. Well, you know, we don't really want to incarcerate these people when they commit low-level offenses. And, you know, we don't, you know, someone assaults somebody else. I mean, come on, what do you want us to do? You want us to hold them in jail? We're not going to hold them in jail. We're going to let them out after 24 hours. You don't want a prison industrial complex, do you? What are you talking about? See, so this is the kind of stuff that falls apart. And it happens at the micro level in the same way that it happens at the macro level. When you start letting those little things slip, when you start letting those little things go by the wayside, people start to pick up on it. we are intrinsically as human beings, we're kind of we have this gravitational pull towards the path of least resistance. And so if I can get away with something, like, I don't know, robbing a pot shop, I'm going to do it. You see it in San Francisco, that video that went viral in San Francisco a while back of that guy who rides into that Walgreens and he starts dumping stuff off the shelves into his garbage bag. You saw the video as a homeless guy. He rides his bike into this Walgreens, starts dumping stuff into this garbage bag, and then rides right out because he knows in the city of San Francisco that if you commit a crime, if you a theft under $1,000, you're going to get a ticket. You're not actually going to go to prison. See, this is what happens. This is how things begin to fall apart. When you cede ground, like when you just say, okay, well, we don't have anywhere to put the homeless people, so we'll just put them in the put them in parks. Just let them stay in the parks. This is how things fall apart. Little bit, piece by piece over time, through bad policy. Now, you think that you're helping those people in the same way that that mom, when she came up to me and she pulled me aside and she said, you don't talk to my kid that way. You would think, or she thought, that she was actually helping her son from this big, mean, older guy. But in reality, what was I trying to do? I was trying to show him how to have respect for the ceremony that he was participating in. Potentially, he could have learned how to stand and be quiet for 15 minutes and engage in this flag-raising ceremony, as I did when I was 11 or 12 years old. But no. See, now the rules have all changed. Now we have to be very, very sensitive, very, very delicate around all these issues, right? So if you kick and kill a dog in broad daylight and you in an attempt to rob a man, what do we do with you? Oh, well, we don't hold you. What are you out of your... We don't hold you. No. We're gonna release you on your own recognizance and then you're going to come back for your court appearance, right? Do you see what I'm saying? This is the kind of stuff that really matters. It's policy. Now, too many people out there respond to politics. They respond to activism, and they like it. They enjoy this kind of really heightened rhetoric, and they enjoy this really kind of heightened sense of revolution, what that might look like in King County, or what that might look like in Seattle, or what that might look like in the nation at large. They love the idea, this intoxicating idea of revolution. And so they vote in people that they think best represent that kind of idea set. This is how you get a Lorena Gonzalez. This is how you get a Sawant. This is how you get activists and people who engage in politics, but not actually in government. Because government is so difficult and it's so tedious in so many ways. So I was checking out Todd Herman's show this morning, and he had a clip from Olympia, and it's a city council candidate. Her name is Talana Reed, and she has aligned herself with Antifa extremists. And also during a recent event, she began her speech by saying "F the police," and then called on individuals to tear everything up in the city of Olympia. Now, before I play this clip, I just want you to know that this is someone who is attempting to be a member of government. This is someone who wants to run a city. And yet, the language that she uses is the language of an extremist. She's using the language of an activist. And people will eat this kind of stuff up. Here's what that sounded like the other day.
Our next speaker, who I am honored to introduce, I want to thank for being here with us. We have Talana Reed.
You said it all. It won't take that long. It won't take up much of your time. It's raining, but can we say a couple names for just because the police? But I want to say their names. Breonna Taylor. And Yvonne McDonald. Both black men were murdered by the police. That's not okay.
I don't know a single person who's okay with murder. I don't know a single one. And you know what's so interesting about this is so you're talking about two people who have just been killed, and your response is the best you have to offer everybody out there in the crowd is that's not okay. The best you have to offer everybody out there is, hey man, two people were brutally murdered and that's not okay. Now, do you think that she'll reference the fact that Senator Rand Paul wrote the Justice for Breonna Taylor Act in an attempt to supplement your Fourth Amendment rights. Do you think that she's going to reference that? Or no, because we live in a country of white supremacy, right? There's no way she's going to say, thank you, Rand Paul, for writing up the Justice for Breonna Taylor Act in an attempt to preserve your rights against illegal search and seizure in your own home. Thank you, Rand Paul. She's not going to say that, right? Because she's not, she doesn't really care about policy. She cares about how this all sounds. And this is a dangerous individual because I can say stuff that sounds really great. I can. I mean, the other day, someone texted in the show. They said, Jack Stein, why don't you run for office? I go, I could do much more with my radio show than I could in office. But the point is that someone can say something that sounds really nice. And again, it's very intoxicating and people eat it up and people enjoy it. But is it good policy? You know, that's the main issue right now. It's not anything else out. It's all policy, 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 policy. And all this talk about, you know, who's going to be the next mayor and who's going to be on the city council and all this other kind of stuff. I'm so tired of like the hot button talking points. I just want someone to say, this is my plan. This is how I'm going to institute it. These are the policies that I'm going to pursue, blah, 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 blah. And then I'll sign off on it. But I don't want somebody who does stuff like this. This really kind of showman-y kind of garbage. And just continuing, here's what the rest of that sounded like.
That's not okay. And so many more lives have been lost. And it amazes me how those pigs can sit over there to watch us peacefully talk about what we want changed in this state. It amazes me. And they don't pay attention until we tear it up. So just see, before I get started, tear everything up in this city until they do what we want them to do.
Yeah, no thanks. No thanks, lady. Like, no thanks. And the thing is that the people out there in that audience who are cheering for that, it surprises me that they're on board with it. Or rather, it doesn't really surprise me that they're on board with it. Because that whole path of least resistance, kind of the easiest way down, the easiest way to go is to be around someone like this. And to be around someone like this is orbit. And then say to yourself that you're actually initiating change within your community, or you are initiating change within your state or whatever it is. Because again, you're a revolutionary. You're an activist. You're getting stuff done, right? So I really implore you, when it comes to the ballot, when it comes to, putting your name on something, don't buy into stuff like this. Don't buy into these talking points. Try to be a little bit more orderly. Try to be a little bit more policy oriented. And yeah, sure, maybe you won't agree with all of those policies, but try to find somebody who at least has a plan, who isn't this kind of activist. Because this is the kind of thing that's going to lead further down for, you know, further erosion of the city, further erosion of the county, further erosion of the state. This is where all of this kind of stuff goes. In the same way that I checked out of being a Boy Scout all those years ago because I just didn't want to do it anymore. That's why. I mean, my entire experience around it had just kind of eroded away, and it wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't engaging anymore. So think about that as we move forward. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, Dr. Z is going to be on the line. We got a fun email from someone yesterday asking about spike proteins in the vaccine. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Before we get to Dr. Williams and Auntie MD PhD, because someone sent us a question yesterday, and Dr. Z, your robot brain went a click, click, clicking when you got this email from a guy named Matt. Really, really interesting question that has to do with COVID-19 spike proteins, and your robot brain went into overdrive, and you have a response to that. But before we get to that, in the next segment, in the good news segment, I'm going to announce this show's Seahawks code word for your chance to win 4 tickets to the first ever Seahawks training camp practice at Lumen Field on Sunday, August 8th, featuring live entertainment, food trucks, and more. Get tickets for this event at Seahawks.com/training camp. And one of these days, Dr. Z, I will learn how to do a live read appropriately. So this email basically goes like this. Guy's name is Matt. Sent it directly to Dr. Z at what's your contact info, Dr. Z?
It's ZananciMD.com. It's Z as in zebra, INNANTIMD.com. You'll find a link to submit a a question that we will look at and answer if Jack agrees on the radio, so everybody can hear the answer.
So this guy, yesterday, Dr. Z, you were talking about spike proteins because you had a conversation with a client of yours about spike proteins. And this guy, Matt, sends you a message, a little hostile, but he says, you claimed there is no issue with spike. And then he links an article to PubMed, which is where I go for all of my medical information. And then he says, you claim there are no deaths associated with the COVID vaccines. And then he links the VAERS database, which is the CDC database on vaccine adverse reactions. And then he says, what about antibody-dependent enhancement? And then he says, don't paint those who question as idiots. And that's from Matt, who was born in 1970. So Matt was a little hostile there, Bill, but you know, we take them where we can get them, even though it's a little hostile. So this study at PubMed, I clicked it as well, and I looked at it with my my non-robot brain. It's entitled SARS-CoV-2 Spike Protein Interactions with Amyloidogenic Proteins, Potential Clues to Neurodegeneration, and Dr. Z, your robot brain is now in full force. So explain to us what exactly Matt was talking about.
All right. So first of all, I want to make sure that I emphasize I in no way, shape, or form am painting anybody as an idiot.
Right. That's
and
me.
the fact that we have opened this up for your questions means that we want your questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that we're going to slam you for your questions. Now, let me give Matt some credit here, because I review the data. I look at the data, and what I was saying yesterday, first of all, I didn't say there was no issue with the spike protein, and it's really important that people listen and read for themselves carefully, credible, peer-reviewed information. And so regarding VAERS, and which is the Vaccine Adverse Events Report Database, this is anyone that has an adverse event for whatever reason after they receive the COVID vaccine, and it's not clear the time frame. Love it if somebody, you know, can specify the time frame if it's like within a year after, because that's kind of ridiculous. But none of the, with the exception of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, there has been no deaths directly related to the action of the vaccine being given.
What?
And now, correct. Now the J&J, in very rare cases, has been linked to the low platelet blood clot forming reaction that has led to death. This is very rare. The distribution of that vaccine was paused, and it was judged to be within safety guidelines, meaning people. There are thousands of people dying every day from COVID, not from the vaccine.
So, Bill, getting back to this study in the couple of minutes that we have left about spike protein.
Let me break down the study. It is the opposite of what if Matt is saying that, okay, there's no issues with the spike protein. I'm not sure if he's reading this carefully. And yeah, I am an mRNA expert. I could write a paper on mRNA. I'm a trained molecular biologist, and you know, would get through peer review because I state the facts and stick to that. And the point here is, yeah, there's issues with the spike protein if you get the virus, not if you get the vaccine. So this is taken all out of context. And if you actually read that abstract, and even better, read the article, look at the methods, they're mixing two things in a test tube and they're finding that they bind. Now, there is well-known neurological problems associated, you know, post-COVID. And some of these problems have been shown to reverse once people get the vaccine, even though they got the disease, including getting their taste and smell back.
So, Dr. Z, just in the last couple of minutes that we have left, I find it really interesting that you know, even I, when I read this study that was sent to us, even I, when I read it, I thought to myself, they're not talking about the vaccine. They're talking about the virus. And what I find so fascinating about this is even with just like a little bit of reading, the misconception of it kind of goes away. And you don't necessarily need to be an MD or a PhD. You just kind of sort of have to get the language of what it means when doctors talk about this kind of stuff. So
read carefully. And if you don't, you know, if you're not versed in reading and understanding, you know, this level of medical literature, ask questions.
Yeah.
Because I love to explain.
Dr. Z, where can people shoot you an email if they want to ask a question and if they want to put a note? We'll have it read on the show, just like Matt, who was brave enough to send his email. We really appreciate it. Where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, seriously, thank you. It's a good discussion. I hope you and you appreciate the back and forth. It's zinantimd.com. Z as in zebra, INNANTIMD.com. Glad to try to answer your questions. Thank you.
All right. So coming up, once again, I'm going to announce this show's Seahawks code word for your chance to win 4 tickets to the first ever Seahawks training camp practice at Lumen Field. Sunday, August 8th, featuring live entertainment, food trucks, and more. You can get tickets at Seahawks.com/training camp. But our code word, which is only for this show, you have to be able type it into the website before the show actually ends. We'll explain it all in the next segment. We'll be right back with some good news. And actually, you know what, Dr. Z, you know what I was thinking about before we have to get out of here? I just wanted to say thank you for coming on the show and just allowing people for years at this point to just call your authority into question. And it means a lot to me and to my listeners that you would come on and just constantly be willing to teach people, Dr. Z. That's one of the things that really attracted to me to you many, many years ago when you and I first started doing radio, is your desire to teach people instead of condescend to people. And I thank you for that, Bill.
We got to come back together. Our country has got to come back together. These are all good people. People are smart. I love that they're smart.
All right.
They love to figure out things for themselves.
Dr. Z, you're the best as per usual. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this with some good news and that Seahawks code word right after this. Peterson, do you want to go to the Seahawks training camp thing on Lumen Field August 8th with live entertainment, food trucks, and more?
Nah, pass.
Okay. Why are you passing, Shane?
Because I'm a 49ers fan. Why would I want to go watch the Seahawks practice?
No.
If they sent me out there, every time everybody cheered, I would be the one guy going, boo!
You can get tickets for this at Seahawks.com/training camp, but we have a special code word that we've been teasing this entire hour. And if you go to MyNorthwest.com and you enter the code word offense, by the end of the show, you will be entered to win 4 tickets to the Seahawks training camp. Now, what I mean by offense is offense, meaning OFFENSE at Northwest.com/win. You enter that code by the end of the show to be entered to win 4 tickets to the Seahawks training camp practice at Lumen Field. Remember, this code word expires at 10 p.m. Details and rules are at MyNorthwest.com/win. Shane Peterson.
Get them while you can, everybody, if you're trying to go catch some Hawks.
So, Shane, just to drop this one more time, because radio is all about repetition, repetition, repetition. You have to go to MyNorthwest.com/win and enter the code word offense, 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 by the end of this show. Otherwise, you can't win. So, Shane, the good news today is that I potentially saved a man's life today. True story. But the bad news is that I'm not going to tell the story until Stacey Joe Rost gets in at 9 o'clock. So everyone is going to have to be on the edge of their seat to learn that the true story of how I saved this man's life. But Shane, I did the whole song and dance. I saw something happen to this guy. I had to call 911. I had to comfort this man I had to be available to this man. And it reminds me of another story, Shane, that I don't think that I've told on the air about when I found a guy who was overdosing in my old hometown of Santa Cruz, California. Have I told you this story, Shane Peterson?
No, you have not told this story. Indulge us.
So it's almost like I got cursed by a gypsy or something like that many, many years ago to always come across people who were either dead or dying. And so many, many years ago, must have been about 4 years ago, there was a tequila festival down in Santa Cruz, California. Big ol', everyone drinking tequila. Hey, we're having such a good time. And I am running on the levee that is in Santa Cruz, California. They've got a levee around the river. And as I'm running past all these drunks who were just wasted on tequila, I come across a guy in a wheelchair. Now, what I initially thought, Shane, is that this guy had wheeled his wheelchair off to the side of the levee and was stuck because the wheels were a-spinning, but the wheelchair was not a-moving. So from my vantage point, being behind the guy, I thought that he was stuck and he was trying to throw this thing in reverse. He had one of those rascal scooter-type things. And so as I approached the guy, I realized that he's hunched over and his body is pushing the little joystick forward, causing the rascal scooter to continue to move forward even though it's stuck in this gravel and it's not going anywhere. So I try to see what's going on with the guy, and then I see that the guy has a rig in his lap. So at some point in time, this guy decided that he was going to shoot up dope in his rascal scooter whilst going down the levee. I know it sounds absurd, but this was this guy's game plan. He was probably in the neighborhood of about 400 pounds, maybe 350, 400 pounds. Big old fat guy wearing all red. So he kind of looked like the Kool-Aid man.
Okay. First off, Jack, I just have to ask a personal side question.
Yeah.
Are a lot of opioid addicts kind of thick boys? Because I can see that being a drug that you probably don't, you know, get well nourished a lot. So was this like a rarity that this guy was this big and he was doing H?
For sure, this is a rarity. Thick boys aren't usually opiate addicts. They can be, but generally, you know, being an opiate addict is a great way to lose a lot of weight. So So I try to push him back in his wheelchair, but he's such a big boy that I physically cannot do it. So I call 911, and keep in mind, Shane, I'm on the levee, so there's not a direct road anywhere. There's not any signs that I can point to, but I kind of get my bearings and I explain to the 911 dispatcher where I am on the levee, and then these sirens start to move in, and they're driving down the bike path on the levee, and they pull up, and they instantly Narcan the guy who comes to consciousness. And I remember looking at this guy, and he just seemed like this was any other day in his life. You know what I mean? He just looked like this could have been any other day in his life. Just, oh yeah, casual medical emergency. I almost died on the side of a river in Santa Cruz, California. And I remember thinking to myself, had I not noticed this amongst all these drunks at this tequila festival, this guy could have potentially been there for like hours. Do you know what I mean? He could have just potentially been sitting there for hours, not going anywhere in his little rascal scooter. So I just have to say, Shane, I'm very thankful for me having been cursed by a gypsy many, many years ago to constantly either run into people who are dying or in need of some kind of help. Because, Shane, this happens to me at least 3 or 4 times a year where there's somebody out there and I just happen to be the guy who has to call 911. And again, that happened to me today. But you have to wait until 9 o'clock to hear the entire story. Or, Shane, where can people find the podcast if they don't want to wait that long?
You can find it on MyNorthwest.com, or you can find it by searching Cairo Nights on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere where you like getting podcasts.
That's exactly right, my friend. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, Billy Sunshine is going to be on the line, and Billy desperately wants to debate about mask wearing and all the recommendations from the Biden administration and the CDC and Nancy Pelosi and all that other stuff. He's chomping at the bit to have a go at your boy Jack Stein. So we'll take a really quick break, and when we get back, stick around for a great debate between me and Billy Sunshine. We'll be right back after this.